Yes, the Yisir is the sponsored Le'ili Nishmat Ezra Ben Mazal. Okay, so Ein Nishmat Ezra Ben Mazal. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to try to spend a few moments on understanding what the Shtar Chatzi Zocher actually is, and I don't have to repeat the old shiurim, and I want to just say one thing. Till now, all the shiurim were on a ethical level, which means an ethical level was what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do. Now let's talk about the subject from a different angle. Let's talk about this subject from, rather, you know already what's the right thing to do, because we've been through all of that with all different types of children, how to do it, but rather, once it's done, what is the fear thing to do. Let me first tell you, and go to page number 4, the history of the Shtar Chatzi Zocher. Historically, the Shtar Chatzi Zocher was a part of the Ksuba. You know that? The original Shtar Chatzi Zocher, was not part of a specific document that was written. But rather, when somebody got married, they wrote to their daughters a ksuba, and with the ksuba, they wrote a Shtar Chatzi Zocher. That's where this document originated. That's how it actually started. Take a look at
this. Is similar to Ksuba Chatzin, the Chatzin?
What's that?
Similar to the concept?
There is a truth in the Maril where he discusses that the right to give to daughters Yerusha comes from Issa Nechotzim. And he adds that since today Issa Nechotzim is not enough for daughters, they converted it into Shtar Chatzi Zocher. Exactly. He writes, the Issa Nechotzim wasn't enough anymore, and therefore they increased the numbers. You have to realize that historically, the Nadim was something that would usually hold up a Chatzin. And without the appropriate Nadim, there would be no wedding. And I give you the best example. In Shin Lamates, the Rambam says that in Ashkenaz, the minhag was that they got married on Friday afternoon. That's when they usually got married. The reason they got married Friday afternoon was why? Exactly. They didn't have enough money, and they didn't want to spend the extra money to make a meal for the chatunah. So what they did was, they said, listen, we're making a meal anyway, and once we make our meal, so we'll have a meal Friday night together. That's what they did. So the Pesach came right, that what happened was, usually they would get into an argument over the Nadim, and then things would drag later and later and later, and the Shoshvinim, who walked down the Chatan de Kala, would carry the candles Friday night after this month.
Wow.
And that was the reason they were mivatul to make the Chatan on Friday night. And from then on they stopped. But historically, Nadim was a big thing, and they said that until the actual Nadim was here, people would not walk to the Chuppah. And what happened was that you had to promise already in the Nadim, Yishtar Chatzi Zocher. That's where this that's the minhag where it originally started, and I want to show you. It's very interesting. In page number four, the Pitzchei Chayshin, who's Rav Lau, and he's one of the greatest experts in the world today in Choshen Mishpat. He says as follows: Loi Metzotzi Hamakor Leminig Zeh. I haven't been able to find the source, and I would appreciate you say that it's in the Chachmei Tzfarad. I would appreciate if you can find it for me, because he writes
based on the
it's based on the
ticket.
Yeah.
To avoid
a master.
So
you mean the concept of what it's built on? But I haven't found that the
On a Shadichim, on a Shadichim, on a Shadichim,
I know. But I haven't found that they had the Minhag to do this. That's what I'm trying to point out. That's what I was saying. If the Eze Mekaymus Nahagi came, this is what I wanted to point out. The Shtar Chatzi Zocher historically is something that existed in Ashkenaz. If a kama mekaymus husker shal yunoisim Shtar Chatzi Zocher lebas b'shas nesiel. Many places the minhag was that they gave it to the daughter at the time of the wedding. The tmura zois, in exchange for this, hischayvi achei habal b'shtar chalitza. Look what happens here. The brothers of the husband. What would happen if the husband died? And the woman would have to go to her brothers for chalitza. Can they give her a rough time? Absolutely. There's a big disagreement in the Rishonim. Remember, we learned about this subject. If you can be kaitzev, you can force to do chalitza. There's a big disagreement in the Machlokes Rishonim if you can actually force a chalitza or not. So what would happen if the woman would come to a situation where she would need a chalitza? And the brothers would say, you want a chalitza? Pay. You're sort of asking for money for a get. You see, historically they would ask for money for a chalitza. So what do they do? So they said, you know what? You want a shtar chatzizocha? We'll give you a shtar chatzizocha on the condition that your brothers sign a document now that if a chalitza is ever necessary, the chalitza will go through. This was sort of a prenuptial. This, by the way, is a very interesting discussion. I mean, prenuptial is one of the hottest topics lately. You're getting a little... We're getting polemic over here about the prenuptial.
I know we had signed it 30 years ago.
Oh, it's signed...
So that's in court.
Sure, tentative. It's a document. Why not? The question is, what happened was it became common today in certain Jewish circles to sign a prenuptial, right? And the prenuptial... You have to be careful what is right, because there are many, what it says, there are many things that you write in the prenuptial that by definition when you get married you live after them. For example, you write that if certain people wanted to write prenuptial, that if it's ever necessary, so then you can be mevatel the kedusha l'mafreya. That you absolutely can't do, because by definition when you get married, you mevatel any earlier conditions to negate the marriage, because else you wouldn't be married in the first place. That's number one. Number two, which again we can talk about this besides from a halachic point of view, we'll talk about it more from a, you know, from an ethical concept if it should be done or not. If you read the Yishalmi, the way the Pnei Moshe explained certain Yishalmis, you're really not supposed to introduce the concept of divorce before a marriage. When two people get married, they're supposed to get married based on the concept of just getting married. You're not supposed to assume things are going to go wrong later. Okay, listen, you can say today things have changed, and that's why certain people have started to do it, but... What's that? But not for gittin. Tonight, Suga, what to do for each other to make the marriage work.
Well, this
is... You have tonight, Suga, yes, 100%, but and that's what the Shtar HaTzizoch clearly is. For death, but usually not for divorce. Divorce is usually not mentioned historically. I just want to tell you, but on the other hand, look at this, it's a Torah HaShoah that needs to be done. And a Hanami, but that's not what we want to discuss right now. If the Sifrei HaPoitzkim HaSvaradim, by the Svaradim, Kemashle Huskim Minig Zeh, this meaning is just about not mentioned. Because of the Nachos Shiva, by the way, is a beautiful Sefer. The Sefer Nachos Shiva, he was an expert at writing Shtar. And just about on any subject that you need a Shtar, he has one there. So he writes, Shevaaskaran Nahagu, Shegam Ha'em Koytsevet Shtar HaTizocha Lebat, the mother also writes a Shtar HaTizocha to her daughter, Sheyila Achari Moizbala, because of Oi, Shevaisha Ein Koytsen Chutz Mitzvorim Vekakoy. Okay, I'm just going to touch on this point very quickly. In the Shtar HaTizocha, which I'll explain soon exactly what the Shtar HaTizocha is, it covers everything can go to the daughters, and there's two exceptions that don't become achoret to shtar chatzizocha. One is tefarim, because who is the father supposed to give tefarim to? His son to learn, not his daughters. Daughters are not supposed to take tefarim. And the second one is kakoyet. And the way the Nachos Shiva explains it is just in the theme of Yerusha. Remember, the idea is not to be ma'avir nachala. That's the idea. On the other hand, what are you trying to do? We have to sort of give something to daughters, because there is too much machloket. We don't give to daughters. So what you do is, if you can, in Karkoyis there's a greater concept of something that remains in the family, Bateyavis, you know, Seyachuza. So if you can try to cut out and make and give the metalphalin to the daughters, it seems to be it's a bit of a better idea. The original Nachos Shivas Tavo is written, Chutz Mit... What's that? It's not the true concept of Seyachuza. However, the concept is that in Kakoyis there's a recognition of going over from father to son. In other things, there's not as much of a recognition. Remember, we're going after the last year, which in the last year we said a host of reasons why there's no problem with Navanaka when you give to a daughter. Number one, we said there's a takana that you can give to a daughter. Number two, we said that the Tashvitz, which I brought you the Ktsoit, the Tashvitz says clearly that once you leave a Dova Choshev, there are no issues. Right? We had the Beis Dovet, that the Beis Dovet says that if there are reasons to give to a daughter, right? The daughter's taking care of you, whatever the case is, it's also allowed. So I'm not coming here anymore from a halachic point of view, but he's saying, in theory, it would be better to do that. However, very often it's not possible. If a person is mostly real estate, it's not even a possibility to cut out kakoyot. But the point that he makes over here is that the Nachas Shiva himself says that what would happen if the mother is the one leaving the Yerusha for her children, and the father's not alive, or the mother got a Yerusha from her family. So there already there's no concept of writing in Chutz Mikakoyed Vitzvorim, because there was already a Hasavas Nachla. It's not going in a direct line, the Nachla at this point. If it's divrei apaiskim nirish nahagi ve'ikam lichta shtach al tizof al abitik shmissis v'choy l'bay l'bishtal zeh. If it's maneini lo re'isi v'lo yishamani shnahagi kain, gam le noidali emosei hifziki minik v'minik hezeh. He says, I don't know when they stop, but the bottom line is today by weddings, nobody writes it. And for what reason, he doesn't know the answer to that either. You see, in the next paragraph, and I want to move to the other subject, so I'll just say it very quickly. If you look at the last line, he says, you see, Ezra, he says, Yesh behem agmas nefesh in yisoyvi lebeis av acher. It's more of an issue of agmas nefesh. And by the way, Ezra, you want to see the Maram Mintz that you mentioned? Take a look at the next paragraph. V'achroinim heviu b'shem shal teshuvas Maram Mintz. It's just a general introduction to the concept of the shtach ha-tizocha. Shalachay nahagi lichtav shtach ha-tizocha v'leichoshu l'aviv yachsanta mishim mipnei takonat nasi habonet, in order that they should get married. Right? And he doesn't finish it here, but if you look in the actual Maram Mintz, he writes it. It is manenu loisagi v'itza nichta. The itza nechosim that you came up with is not enough daughters today. So you give machatizocha. By the way, who realizes the translation of the word chatizocha? What it means? Half of a male. That's what they're getting. But soon you see the concept of the shtar. What is so amazing about the Shtar HaTizocha, by the time we're through with it, you'll understand this, is that you can practically do anything you want with Yerusha. Any condition you ever want to do, if you use the Shtar HaTizocha, a person who has shown has a special needs child, right? And he wants to leave the Yerusha to his other children on condition that the special needs child will be taken care of. So we'll see how to do it. Really, anything you actually want. I wrote a Yerusha a couple of months ago where parents left over many homes, and the parents said that I once denied that the house that I actually live in should remain as a home for all my children who want to ever come here to live. They can always stay at my home. It should be a guest home for my children or for Achnas Zarachim. But how do you force children to keep one of your demands, La'achamisa? With the Shtar HaTizocha, you'll be able to do anything you want. So that's why it's a very, very fascinating document to be familiar with. Okay? Now, what's that? We'll go through how it works. You'll see you can force anything. And I'll show you soon, by the way, what happens when you don't honor. I'll share with you a beautiful detail that I dealt with a few years ago, which really, really shows what a person can do when you don't honor the Shtar HaTizocha. Okay, so that's why Rabbi Sutton said to me, he says, I know, he says, people are not doing it, but if you want a good idea of how to really tie up the Nechosim, this is the appropriate way to do it. And I'll just show you one thing which is very interesting. Look at the last paragraph. It's a very famous Tshuv in the Noyed Yehuda. There's a whole bunch of letters written between the Noyed Yehuda and his own son-in-law about this question. What happens if the father goes and he leaves his daughter Shtar HaTizocha, but then the daughter dies before they get married? So is the future husband Yerush the Shtar HaTizocha or not? That's the question. The father dies, right. I'm sorry, the father dies beforehand. Do the Yerushim need to split the Yerusha? God says, right. Do the Yerushim need to split the Yerusha? You're really starting to ask a question. Is the Shtar HaTizocha really a Yerusha document, or is it a conditional document that's limited if you don't have that? So let's take a look at... Before I even read the Shtar HaTizocha, which I'll do in a couple of moments, then we can go into all kind of interesting stories that have happened with the Shtar HaTizocha. But I want to show you on page number 6, where the Ramah describes the Shtar HaTizocha. All right, and we'll see how we actually can deal with it. And it's interesting, by the way, there's going to be one Ramah in Ebenezer, and there's one Ramah in Choshen Mishpat, and the two Ramahs don't say the same thing. I want to show you exactly how it works. First, read the introduction. Page number 6, in the middle of the page. Hago, the Ramah tells us, HaKoytsev Lebitoi ilachasmai, a man that writes to his daughter and to his son-in-law, she yitlu chelik ke'echad mibonav, you write to your daughter that she should take a share as one of your children, ha've ki'ilu kosach kach le'ishtoi, ve'eina noitom ela b'nachosim shahoyu loy b'shas ha'ksiva. So what happens is, what's that?
It's like a gift.
It's like a gift. So the Matan Lechaim also hit the Veda. Here's the problem, and this is why they told you today, Baya, Baya, Baya. Because the Baya, he said it to me too. Rabbi Harari said to me, he said, you do Matan Lechaim. I said, what's with the fact that everything that the father earns after Matan Lechaim is not going to the daughters? He says, I don't know, it's a good question. What can I tell you? It's a problem, he says. It's a problem. And finish. Yes. Who said Baya Baya? Who said the same thing? He says Baya. He says it doesn't work. Now comes the Ramah. The Ramah says I have a master plan. How you can figure out to give to your daughter Yerusha, you're never going to have any problem. This is the perfect plan. Imagine a hagen b'shtar chatzi zocha. This that is a minute that you write a shtar chatzi zocha. Shekoytsen achshav lebonos shenoytlin. By him, the Ramah says the minute was. Which means in the full Yerusha, just like the males get. Why? Mishim dekaytiv lahem derech hodor shekayiv lahem sachma. So here's the plan. The Ramah says, I have an absolutely tremendous plan for you. What you do is, you write a note. And the note says that I owe my daughter, okay, kach v'kach, a certain amount of money. Now what's that? Oh, you want to say it's a daita? Good. And take a look. He writes over here, b'derech hador. But Ezra, it's good you picked that up because I want to show you soon that when you read the Ramah in Kosher Mishpat, he writes a b'derech halvor. So, and it's interesting, I found different shtar chatzizochas. Some are written b'derech hador, and some are written b'derech halvor, and some seem to have put both in there. So it's one of the two. But somehow the father comes along and the father says, I owe my daughter a certain amount of money. Now, Ezra, if you were writing this shtar, how much money do you owe your daughter? How much money should you write? Well, it has to be. Remember, we're trying to give an incentive for the son. Well, one second. I'll tell you about the $1 million in a second. We got to give an incentive for the son to honor the will. So the number has to be a greater number than the son stands to benefit from the will. Which means, let's say a person leaves $1 million, and he has two children. It's a boy and a girl. And he wants to go and leave to the girl half, I'm just throwing out a number here, half of the Yerusha, even though the Ramah says chatzi. And I'm telling you that today people are giving already possibly even an equal share. But the point is, it doesn't really matter that it's called shtar chatzi zocha, that's just based on the history. But this shtar can be used to give any amount of money to the daughter. You're writing this out. You're right. I want you to know that I owe my daughter, if it's $1 million Yerusha, how much do you want to owe your daughter? $600,000. Why? $600,000. And
in
a pay spent to fulfill the Tanai, and then he'll get his $500,000. Right? But if you write any number that's lower than 50% of the Yerusha, his share, he won't have the appropriate incentive to keep it. So remember, you always need to put in a certain figure there that's at least greater than the amount he stands to gain. That's the idea of how you write up one of these shtars. V'lo yitata, like, what's that?
He says, I own $600,000.
Following over $1 million.
My daughter just say, I want my $600,000.
Very good. So Alan's asking a great question, and Alan says, if the father left to the daughter more than 50%, so let the daughter say to the son, let me collect my shtar hodor, right? Let me collect my shtar hodor, or my shtar havor, however we're going to call it, depending on the two remotes. So what happens afterwards? The daughter takes more than 50%, and the son gets nothing. Okay, so there's got to be, that's an excellent point, there has to be an additional cash. Additional cash is that as you mischive yourself to your daughter a greater sum than 50% of the estate, I'm talking about his two children, or a greater sum than the son stands to benefit, at the same time, you make a deal with your daughter that if your husband, if, I'm sorry, if her brother wants to share with her the condition of the shtar, or a certain amount of Yerusha, then she forgoes her rights to this note that's owed to her. You don't like that, you see. Huh? So Ez is asking a great question. Ez is asking, right, Mendel? Ez is asking that is Das Hamaskaya. So the Das, in other words, who signs any document? Every document is signed by the Das Hamaskaya. So Ez is asking that suddenly now the daughter should be the Mitzchayev. Right? That's what you're asking. You're asking now that there's two Mitzchayevim. There's the parents to the child and the child to the daughter. Okay? And that's an excellent question. And the problem is, I'll tell you why it's such a good question. Because if it's not true, then it's a knut. If it's true, you should need the consent of the daughter. I mean, to me and you, when you write a shtar chatzizocha, the daughter never sees it because it remains with the will. The daughter never sees the shtar. And if it's not true, then it's a knunyus. That's a joke, right? So I'll start off first by pushing you off, and I'm going to say to you no. If I go and I make an eschivus, right? But the eschivus is conditional, so I control the whole eschivus. Which means I'm making an eschivus to you. But I'm making an eschivus to you only on the condition. What's that? Why can I give you halvah tonight? Oh, you mean if you owe the money?
I owe you money.
I don't really owe you money, right? Why don't you stop me a step further first? Why don't you ask me a better question? I don't owe you money. Let's go with that question first. I don't owe you money. How do I suddenly owe you money? I don't owe you any money.
Once you admit that you owe money, you
okay. So there's a daita. I can acknowledge I owe you money. Obviously, I can't be able to say Meshat Anigoch, so I need to do it with the appropriate kinyon, right? Okay, so what are the kinyonim? It's Edim, and the Edim make a kinyon in the shtar we'll see on behalf of the daughter. It's interesting, we're going through all these things, and as we'll read the shtar, we'll actually understand what it says. So you make a kinyon that the father owes the daughter the money. Okay, now at the same time, the father makes a condition with the daughter, I'm only have this choice to you if you're going to agree that if my son wants to take the Yerusha, then you'll let me out of this Zaydaisa. You're not happy with it. Yeah, because it boils down, it's like, no, you. Okay, so I wanted to show you one more line here, and then I'll address your point. And I agree with, I'm going to tend to agree with him. It is a Knonius. It's a Knonius, yes. I'm going to write that, I'll talk about that in a second. He says as follows. He says, the son will only become potter from paying out the choiv, because remember, the son is going to yarsh the choiv of his father, because the choiv is going to be against the estate. Only kishenoyis lahem kemayas korim, even derech zeh. Let's conclude this remark with this style. Yochel lahaknoyis afmashaloi b'shusay henroy hen muchzik. With this style, you can go and you can even yashin roy muchzik anything. All right, and you'll take a look at this Pitzchei Tshuva, which I won't go through right now, but the Pitzchei Tshuva discusses in the name of the Yeshiva Yaakov and in the name of the Noiv Yehuda, when you have a Shtar HaTzizocha that's not written up properly and becomes like regular Yerusha, so then he goes back to the first part of the Ramah, and what happens is in such a situation, the daughter only can collect from the date of the document. She can't collect anything that came after the date of the document. So the Shtar HaTzizocha gets around this specific problem. Now, I just want to take a few moments because I think Ezra and Alan together raised an excellent point. Secondly, speaking, the old Shtar HaTzizocha is a knunyus. It's really it's a joke. It's not for real. Right? That's what you're basically saying. And your proof is because you would need to have Mitzchayim on both sides. Right? So, and there's no question that what's really happening here, all the father is doing is the father is forcing you to give Yerusha to his daughters. Right? Okay. I want to tell you a story that I actually had. And the story that I actually dealt with for many, many years gave me a lot of insight into the Shtar HaTzizocha. It's one of the most fascinating dinatayrs that I've dealt with. And the sums of money here were outrageous. And I told you the sums of money here. I mean, it's lo yeumen how much money was involved here. There was a father that left over 8 children. From the 8 children he left over, there was one daughter. It's a very interesting tavor, what he left. He had 2 kids he decided he's writing out of the Yerusha. But he didn't really write them out. This is what he did. He had one son who he felt was not stable enough to hold on to his share in the Yerusha. Right? He felt he was not stable. And it's true, the son was really not stable. He had another son that sued his father 4 times while his father was alive. So he decided this time he's going to do the same thing to this son. So here's what he did. The son that sued him 4 times while he was alive, he wrote him out. The next son, who wasn't stable enough to hold on to and control his own money, he gave him Yerusha, but on the condition that the oldest brother holds on to the money as a trust, as an apotropis, to give, right, to hold the goof, and the payers, the proceeds, are going to be passed down to this sibling. And there was some similar arrangements made for that son to sue the father. So they didn't actually get a piece to take out of the Yerusha, but on the other hand, they were compensated in a way where the siblings held on to their money. This is the story that happened. Now, how did the father enforce that that actually happened? So the father wrote the classic Shtar HaTzizocha. Father wrote as follows. He says, "I'm moizeh by Zohar Gemurah that then Idah and Achayv and all kinds of." It starts with interesting. It starts with the first line of that Shtar was that firstly I take $10,000 out of my estate, and that $10,000 is going to be Mekayim Yerusha Deraisa. So just nobody can have a question that there was no Yerusha Deraisa in the document. Done. Now after Yerusha Deraisa, he says, I write a Shtar HaTzizocha. I'm Achayv myself to my daughter. This huge chunk of money is what I owe to my daughter. After my daughter will come, come in. He says, after my daughter will, he says as follows, most of the money is owed to the daughter. However, if my son will keep the following conditions, and I would start to list what his conditions are. Condition number one is they're going to give a half a share to my daughter. Condition number two is that son number six won't take a chelik in the Yerusha. Condition number three is that son number seven won't take a chelik, but brother number one is going to hold on to his money. Right? Then, if they do that, then I allow everybody to go and take their appropriate share in the Yerusha. But if not for that, then what I want should happen is that my daughter should take this sum of money. And this sum of money, of course, was greater than most of the Yerusha. So everybody had to keep all the conditions that he attached. So already you see what's happening here. The Shtar HaTzizocha basically forced his children to listen to whatever the document says, and look, they never get Yerusha. Now, Simon raised the point. But what happens 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later? I'll show you from this story that the Shtar HaTzizocha obligates you forever. That's what it really does. What happened was that now we're fast forwarding 30 to 40 years later. And 30, 40 years later, this son who was not stable had children. And they were very stable. So they went and they sued the uncle with brother one for their trust. They said, Zubah the time of the crow. They made a lumber here. They said, why did our father not leave the Yerusha to our father, our grandfather? Not because he didn't want us to have, because our father was not stable. But we're here, we're very capable of holding on to our own money. And since we're very capable of holding on to our own money, please give us the money right now. They sued in a certain bezin, and I don't know why the bezin decided to rule this way, but whatever the case is, the bezin decided that we're not going to go on what's written in the shtar, but rather we're going to go on the intent of the noisein, and the kavana was to give it over. What's that? Undana, whatever the case was. A little tough to make an undana 40 years later. I don't know. It's
how are you going to know?
I don't know. The sack was, again, let me say, I was not.
It's in the wording. The
wording in the Shtar HaTzizocha was not clear that there was intent. You know, if somebody makes a commitment and he writes the reason, so you say that if the reason is not perfectly upheld, so you're mafatl, it was a very big serious thing that the Bezin ruled that way. They did, but they did. And they ruled to give the money to the grandchildren. Fine, okay, fine. I can't. That's a Bezin that I have nothing to do with. The Bezin is not in this country. That doesn't have to do with the control. They made the ruling what they did. Okay. So what happened next was, but the truth is it was a bit trickier, because the grandchildren got very smart. Why did they get smart? They were now Baruch Hashem, so this pot of gold was opened up, you know, their eyes were open, so a big pot of gold. So it is a very big problem, because the estate and the family, they were mostly in the real estate business. and they never really split. You know, like the Imam of Basra talks about these tabayas. Once in a while, there are children, when there's a family business, sometimes the children can live for many years, sort of as if the father was still alive. And they sort of kept the business running in that way. Now, there are siblings, older siblings, that are in the business for 40 years. So they took the little piece of Yerusha that was left to them, and they grew it exponentially. Okay, now, on the other end, before they were in the business for many years before the father died. So their share was much greater than the younger siblings' share who were not stable and never worked in the business. When the grandchildren sued, the nephews sued their uncle, they didn't sue for the share of the Yerusha, they sued for the present amount that the uncles were worth right now. Okay, so this already became labor. Now already there's a major machlokes, and this came to a bezin here in America, which I was present there at the bezin. It's a very, very interesting case. So, listen.
They're together.
What's that?
They're together.
Wow, listen what happens now. Now comes the best part of the story. So we're here in America, and they walk in, the siblings, and they say to the older brothers, we have a psak bezin. It seems to be in it, so they gave him the full share. Because we have a psak bezin, we're entitled to a full share. Give us an eighth of your value that needs to go to us. Is what they did, and we're talking about such enormous sums of money you can't imagine. So they walk into Benton, and they said, no problem, we'll give you an eighth, but we have a problem. Before they give you the eighth, we've got to bring in some other people into the Benton. And who walks in? Lo and behold, that single sister is there. And the sister walks in, and she says, by the way, my father wrote a Shtar HaTzizach. And the Shtar HaTzizach says that unless you carry out all the contents that are written in the Shtar HaTzizach, who does everything belong to? To the sister. And she says, and my father wrote, I don't know why the Bezin Yisrael ruled the way they did, but what did my father write? My father wrote that this sibling shouldn't get any money to himself. What suddenly happened? This sibling's walking out with money. So I sue for the full estate, okay, and the oldest brother is there, and he says, I'm very sorry, because I'm about to write out a check for everything all of us Yashans to the sister. And that's it. And you guys, even though you have a psak from that bezin that you guys want, you guys have nothing, because there's no way to take any Yerusha from. So I just want to show you how powerful the Shtar HaTzizach actually is. I mean, it's just amazing what it can do. So they went, and the bezin here ruled that they're right. It's a choice. Either it goes to the younger sister, or if it doesn't go to the younger sister, it stays by the oldest brother. So they went to another bezin. This time out went to Europe. This thing was traveling around. I mean, they were looking for the business with the dinim all over. And they said, in Europe, they said that this bezin, they said, the argument came and said, Ezra's argument, knunya. And the bezin here wrote back, listen, it absolutely is a knunya. It's a knunya from the greatest gedolim, from the late achronim and the late yishayim and the early achronim, who used this knunya all along. So the answer to your question really is, you don't need a dasa mitzchayv of the sister. If the father is doing everything, it's just a way for the sister of tying up the assets. Nobody should have any other choice. There's one dasa mitzchayv, it's the father. And the father's making tenoyim. And that's all it is. It doesn't make any sense. That was the Ramah's takan. This is the only way to do it.
That was
takan. Yeah. Well, that's the takan. The Ramah already made a takan. I'll show it to you. Yeah? So that's just the answer to your question. But I think this is so important to understand it. And now I'll read the other remote question. And now I'll read the actual shtar.
What's the name of the case?
Well, sometimes in its entirety, if you force a deadlock, you have to settle. If you realize you're not getting anything anyways, you have no choice.
What did they settle on? The original eight?
They settled on that. They had some type of arrangement at the end where the whole thing was worked out. The truth is, it's not totally settled yet. It's still ongoing. I can't. I don't want to say what's happening next, but it's not a pretty picture. It's unfortunately, when there's a lot of money, there's a lot of chaos to fight and everything. But it's not totally settled. But it's just such an important comprehension of what the Shtar HaTzizach actually is. Take a look at page number 7. I want to read to you the next one. Then I want to actually approach the Shtar. And as we go through the Shtar, I'll tell you all the different issues that can come up with the Shtar. Take a look at page number 7. Okay, first read the Mechaber. The Mechaber talks about the typical Hilchus Yerusha. Ein kol advar malol amur melech shalom amoshin Yerusha. Remember that all the people you can't give Yerusha to is only when you write it as Yerusha. Avol mam amoshin matana for kayomim. Lefichot hamachal kmechot malpip tishi shchiv meira. Read the laechot. Ach laechot. Imiit laechot. Vehish for lahem abachor. Aynosim lemishein roi liyoshit barv kayomim. Remember, because he did it beloshin matana. ואם אומה משם ירושה, לא יהיה מקלום. וכזה נתמך כל מה שקורה זה בתורה, בין בתחילה, בין באמצע, בין בסוף, אוקיי? משם מתונה, אבל אף אף כפי שזה לא ישו של תחיל בסוף, כבר קיימן. אוקיי, now, skip down a bit, and we get to the white line of the remote. He says, as follows, okay, now here, it says, do you want to see a sakona? I'll show you a sakona. The ma shenei hagen עכשיו לכתב שתה חויב לביטה להפן שאין ייתן לביטה חצי זוכר ייפות המין החויב. It's interesting, they play with the words הידו and חויב, whatever the case is. But take a look at the Rama, he writes שתה חויב. Doesn't write this time הידייסה like we had before.
Isn't there a difference? I thought there was a difference between
yeah. Right, there are many differences. I'm
saying Menyan Hodad, Menyan Hayoshi, but Hayoshi
is obligated to pay or they're not obligated to pay. Now that's if there's a Choyv against the Yorshim.
Yeah.
But here you're doing something else. Here,
the Choyv
yeah.
becomes a
Choyv
against the Yorshim.
Oh, it becomes a Choyv against the Yorshim. Okay, we'll go, it's not on my head exactly now what all the differences are. Remember, we can get back to that, but not for right now. Okay, take a look at the actual shtar. Let's not read the shtar, and then at the end, I attach to this at the end, is a very nice addendum, which, you want to take a quick look at it. He sent this to me, Moshe Fagro sent this to me from Chaim Cohen wrote this. What he did basically is, he wrote in English, a short version of the shtar chatzizocha. I happen to like much more the shtar chatzizocha in Lashon Kodesh, because when you go into the halacha, you cover so many more things off the halacha that I really enjoy that shtar. But just take a quick look at this shtar on the first page. He says, I, the undersigned, hereby admit with the effect of admission, right? He does the hidah, in front of a duly constituted bezin, that I have obligated myself without any limitations or conditions to pay the sum of, you write there a certain sum, two, that's the daughter, okay, of, right, so and so, and you do payable 1 hour before death. Okay, now read the next paragraph. Notwithstanding the foregoing, this obligation shall be rendered null and void if the wishes expressed in my last will or trust deposited with, okay, located at, will be carried out. It's a very interesting start out. It's interesting. He doesn't write it here. You notice that he doesn't write it that the daughter is Michael. He writes it that you yourself are Mavatul. I don't know. It's interesting, right? You know what it says? The Shtar HaTzizocha is written not that the daughter who got the rights forgoes her rights, but rather that you yourself take out the condition. Okay, I have to remind you to that a little bit. He says, but if you will be carried out in regard to any benefit that said will benefit, okay, above named, and they do not contest, then automatically there's no problem whatsoever. You see, this is the way it's written. Take a look at page number 2. Page number 2 is very interesting. This is the actual shtar. Nusach shtar chatzizocha. The nusach goes as follows. He says, Zichron Edith, Shehoshe Befaneinu. This is a recording of Edith that was by us. And first he writes the date, he writes the place, and who came from him. Eich Shebol Befaneinu. And I go to 4 lines from the top. V'amalono, he says to us, Havaloni alai edim, be witnesses, k'sheim v'namonim, v'knini menu, and make the following kinyan. Now look at these Rosh Tevis. V'kinyan gomer agap sidr. So there's an actual kinyan made. May achta from right now. V'afchismu itni liyad biti, hayakora. Now give this over, sign, and this is going to be given over to my daughter. Okay, let's skip the name. La'edus l'schut v'l'ra'i. Okay, the next sentence of the document is what's written in all the shtar tavos, that I did this with from my goodwill, without being forced, without being coerced. Okay, kiyim, look at these Rosh Tevis, b'leif shalom, nefesh chafetza, das shalom, yeshevet. Right, usually the lashon that's used today in the shtar is our das saluma, clear frame of mind, because if a person wasn't in the clear frame of mind, then they questioned the person afterwards about it. V'hinni, now here we get to the main part of the shtar. V'hinni moide b'fneichem, a moide in front of you, hayoim today, kim moide the bezin choshev. This admission is like a bezin choshev, so you can't say meshat ani boch, you can't say I was kidding. V'roi b'haydog gemura, shrider v'kayama. Okay, now, d'loi b'ashtod, d'loi b'ashtod, d'loi b'asno, d'loi meheda b'im yoyim d'nam l'olam. I cannot back out of this commitment. Obviously, only we'll write later that if you decide to write another one or to be mevatelist, you can. But if you're not mevatelist, then it's clearly upheld and you can't back out. Now look at the next line. Ich sheyesh biyodu, that there is in my hands, mamon biti, mamon, the money that belongs to my daughter, Aniska Le'el. And how much money? Elef tagrim. That's very interesting. The old shtoris all said elef tagrim. That's what they all said. So there were certain people that wrote the Shtar HaTizacha, they didn't replace the number, and they left it at elef tagrim, you know, like kol chamir v'chol chamir, you know, there's some mumbo-jumbo that you say, and that's it, you don't have to know what it means. So there's truvas that are written in the Chassam Sofer and in the Noam Yehuda, when people just wrote, they left this, they had large sums of money, and they left over this kind of shtar. And the daughters wanted to argue, they said, no, it's more than this elef tagrim, because they just wrote it to show it's a strong amount of money. And the Chassam Sofer writes back, no, you're absolutely wrong. If you wrote elef tagrim, that's all the daughter will get, is the elef tagrim. So if you put an amount of money that's far too low, then the son will say, I'm not going to honor the wishes, I'm just going to give the daughter that amount of money. I just want to tell you something very interesting. Somebody recently went and he wrote a Shtar HaTizacha, which ended up in court, and he was a Rebbe, and he wrote $1 million on a Shtar, $10 million on a Shtar HaTizacha. And it was contested in court, and the court did not honor the Shtar HaTizacha. Why? Because the court said, since the number was so high, the number doesn't make any sense. It's like a daughter family kiss. The number that's put in should reflect, and as I said, a bit more. You know, you estimate the person's potential value, and you put a little bit more than half. That's what the number should actually say.
And what if you have...
Go ahead. What's that?
What if you have more than one daughter? You put all the eggs.
But you can do it very simple. You can either write... You can do write it two ways. Either write it to all the daughters on the... Or to, you can do it either way. You can write it to all the daughters. Or you can write it to one daughter, and on the condition that the sons take a certain amount and give a gift to their other sisters, do anything. You can write it
to
special
children,
anybody. You can do it to an outsider, a person that took care, a caregiver. That's the beauty of the Shtar, because
if you write to only one daughter,
right?
And the brothers put the group together without one daughter,
right?
And
exclude the other one. The daughters can, a knunya on the knunya. they can get, that's an excellent point Rabbi Mendel is making. You get together with that daughter, and after you get together with that daughter, right,
she's going to agree.
She's going to agree to the estate, right? Excellent. Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm sorry. Rabbi Mendel. Okay. The what you do is right. You make a knunya with that daughter, Rabbi Mendel says, and after you do that, so that's a good point. Good point. So what do you got to do? You got to write to each daughter. Between the daughters. If you write it to one, you've seen such a story happen, you just thought of it now that it's going to happen. Right. It's an excellent point. It can end up being by one daughter, and then they can fool everybody. That's good. Now take a look at the next word, by the way. I just want to point out before we continue, it says b'mizimonim, because you make it into cash, right? Because you don't want that anything else should be paid out before the Shtar HaTizacha is paid out. I want you to know there's a tshuva in the Chassam Sofer where somebody once came and whatever his definition of a check was by the Chassam Sofer, and somebody wanted to say that since it has to be paid out of the Shtar HaTizacha b'mizimonim, because only cash, a check is not acceptable. It's such a tshuva in the Chassam Sofer. And the Sofer wrote that a check is acceptable as cash. But he said mizimonim, he meant to say that it's payable immediately. He didn't mean to say, you saw that they're true.
He doesn't mean check,
he
means that
pay for
money.
He says pay for money, and again, what exactly the check was and what exactly the check is today.
Banknote.
What's that?
Banknote.
Banknote, yeah.
Banknote is like $100, it's a banknote.
It's not a banknote.
Not the gold.
Right. He writes other things too. He goes beyond the banknote. There were certain ways of being mischayev money with shtoris, but it wasn't really a shtar. I mean, what is a check worth today in halacha? Did you figure that out yet? I mean, there's a whole sefer written how check halacha. You saw that sefer? And I got another two volumes. By the way, I think the answer to the question is, depends which country you're in. That might make a very very big difference. And the truth is, I haven't seen any two places that tell me the same thing what a check is, and I think a check is simply a right to go collect.
So that's the law in the check, but that's not the. I think
being
a more people doesn't look at it that way.
Why not?
Like a dolphin has it.
It's a what?
More like dolphin has it, but people understand that it's not only a
Yeah, it has an actual. It's interesting. So I didn't know the sefer. I have the sefer check by Loch. It's quite an interesting sefer. But then he says as follows. He says, "Imchuyev ani l'shalim sach hanal l'biti hanal l'yoytze chelaser shi'lani ba'le hanal l'pitanoi hamzuyal m'shtazer." The kach is nei ti'ima. Okay, now here you see Ezra. It's a tonight you make with a daughter. Says mamper on achay hanal, but yochol live the year el shoachas kai demaisi. If she years manahu, enani asholim vakis man acheklav. When that time comes, they ask for no further extension. Rakshem machuyev ani iboy koychei ozul shalom toasach anal leviti anal odiyotzach haletzer. Okay, you continue the shtar. It's very interesting. What happens as the shtar continues? The shtar basically says that however, I'll skip to that part of the shtar, which you'll see that part of the shtar. He says, one second. Okay, yeah, take a look. Page number 3, 4 lines from the top. Okay, tonight is there, it's Nesi and Biti. This condition I made with my daughter Hanal, and that is that Kishiagiazman, Piroin Hanal, when it comes time of this payment, via Isu Bani Askorim, later Gonachav Lachalik is Voinai, and my children want to go and take a Chalik in the Yerusha, Yehabreir Biad Bani Askorim, Shalom Lachoyf Hanal. Right, they'll have the option to pay this amount. Okay, as Rabbi Beda told us, basically speaking, this Shachat Zocha gives us the ability to write any condition that a person wants. But I just want to point out something very, very important, two specific points, and that is as follows. And I was saying this shir this Sunday in Rav Katz's shul in Flatbush, and Rav Katz, the Rav of the shul, was there, and he made this point at the end of the shir. And he said as follows, he says, this is all wonderful when it comes to children, but what should a person do when it comes to his wife? Does anybody think of that issue? Historically, and I researched this, and except if Rabbi Meisel can tell me differently, the Yerusha was left to the wife as a chelik of the Yerusha, which means people left money basically to the children, and they left money to the children, but they left a certain amount of money to their wife. Why did they leave a certain amount of money to their wife? It was not really mavanach, because they simply, the wife, according to Ibn Ezra, is entitled to live from the estate as part of the Tanai Ketubah for the rest of her life. So therefore, they don't want the wife to have to come on to the children, because then there would be big trouble. So they figured, let the wife have her own money. That's what they've always done. Now, the question is, what happens today? Suddenly people are doing something totally new. What people are doing is, they're leaving all the money to the surviving spouse, and then the spouse leaves it to the children. Right? So firstly, I want to throw at you one thing. Mava Nachla? I don't know. Is that Mava Nachla, by the way? Theoretically, it should be. Correct. It could possibly be sort of a Mava Nachla. That's fine. Let's leave Mava Nachla. Let's set that aside. You want to argue that there's Mava there, people have no choice, and the intention is for the children. Okay, whatever you want to say about the Mava Nachla. But what you really need to think about is, again, and nobody wants to discuss this, what happens if the wife gets remarried? And when she gets remarried, who gets the money? A new husband. And then the children can get nothing. It's a serious issue. It's not something which is, it's something which a person should really think about. If a person is of average wealth, I found people don't really plan, because they say, look, if our average wealth should live on it, and then it'll go over to the children. But if a person is more substantial, then that can become an issue. Alright, I just want to throw out one more interesting point, which I haven't seen anybody mention besides Rafael Cohn. And Rafael Cohn writes, he has another issue. What happens if a wife leaves Yerusha to her children, and she doesn't leave the Yerusha to her husband? Okay? So he says there's a problem, because the husband in the Nichtei Yishtoi is the Choyv Rishon, is the first to collect. And he comes before Yerusha. There are certain Bali Chayvis that will come before Yerusha. The husband is one of them. The husband is the first to collect. And Moshe writes the same thing.
What does she give? Does she give him like a Nichtei
Melug? Yeah, she has a Nichtei Melug, and she wants the husband to get it first.
That would be the only other job. She doesn't have the family. She doesn't have the family.
Yeah, but again, for Tyrus Yerusha, Yerusha Sabal comes before the children.
But
so he writes the will from. So he suggests.
He's
what he writes. Matara Chaim is if you give it, fine, but if you don't, you don't.
I mean, if she gives it as Matara Chaim, then the husband has no...
If he gives it as a matana mechayim, as Yerusha and Achanami, he suggests that you write another in that situation. It's not a common situation. You should write another shtar that first the husband writes the shtar hedos to his wife, and then the wife writes the Yerusha to the children. That's how he suggests writing it. Rav Moshe has a tshuva.
How does that help the situation to get you married?
What?
How does that help?
No, it doesn't help. I'm just saying. I just mentioned the point specifically that he said that when a wife leaves Yerusha to children, it should be valid. Rav Moshe's tshuva is an interesting tshuva. Rav Moshe's tshuva is when a wife went and left money for tzedakah with a civil will, and the husband decided that he is the chayv rishon and he's going to collect the money before the tzedakah. That's Rav Moshe's tshuva. And in that tshuva, Rav Moshe writes that civil will is upheld. I don't know. I just want to say one thing. Rav Moshe doesn't write a tshuva on a regular case where civil will is written. So, just something to think about. Rav Moshe's tshuva, it's very unclear what exactly his position was, why he felt civil will was upheld. If it's in every case, or if it's just in that case. Alright, if you read Rav Moshe's tshuva, it's an interesting tshuva on its own. But okay, this is a general understanding of Shtar HaTzizocha, but as Rabbi Harari told me that in most Saradim, what they really are doing is the Matana Michayim, and Rabbi Maxi Sutton told me that this is a wonderful idea because if you do this, you can't run into any trouble. But it's interesting to note that the minute comes from Ashkenaz, it's not something which historically has been done by the Saradim. And Be'ez Hashem, the next 2 weeks, Rabbi Sutton told me today that most people here are not doing it, even though he thinks it's a very, very good idea. The Ashkenazim are all doing it. Yes, it's a simple solution. They're all doing it and they're pushing it very, very much. But by the Sfaradim, not as much, and obviously because it was not accepted in Sfarad. That's the reason why. And Be'ez Hashem, I just want to say another couple of follow-up shiurim on Yerusha. The next couple of weeks are going to be very interesting. I'm going to do next week, there's no shiur, but I want to do just a shiur on Yerusha in Torah, or an intangible item from the Tanah. We'll talk about Rabbonis, we'll talk about Rosh Yeshivas, we'll talk about Chazanim, we'll talk about Yerushas in Mitzvahs, and all of these types of different things. And we can have Yerusha, and we'll do another couple of weeks, and then we'll finish the study.